Eddie, the senior year. Chapter 5. The spring season, part 1. After school, the track team heads to the locker room to get ready for the grand opening of the spring season. No one on the team has seen Eddie since he walked out of the school a few days ago. And today, no one finds Eddie in the locker room either. Today's meet is against Centerville High School, Northside's arch rival. Last year, Northside took first, second, and third place in every event. Whether they can do that again this year is yet to be seen. The team heads out to the track and, not surprisingly, the discussion is centered around Eddie's whereabouts. The discussion is whether Eddie is absent from the meet because his hip is still giving him a problem, or if the problem has something to do with Mr. Crum. Once they get to the track, Braden spies Mr. Crum in the bleachers. Braden informs everyone that Mr. Crum is in the bleachers, sitting in his usual place, with a pair of binoculars. Also in the bleachers, sitting far from Mr. Crum, is Dr. Noreen Brooks, the school superintendent. She is well aware that Eddie is not on the track today. Kathy knows that Eddie will be watching the meet, but not anyone else. Mr. Fraser, optimistic that Eddie would show up for the meet, has lost all hope of that happening once Kathy informed him that Eddie has dropped out of school. The call for the first event, the 100-yard hurdles, is made. As the hurdlers get ready to run, Mark spots McCutcheon running a few warm-ups. It appears McCutcheon is still on the Centerville team. This is surprising to Mark, since McCutcheon was disqualified at the state invitational meet during the indoor season after testing positive for steroids. As the gun goes off, the sound of the hurdlers' spikes grinding into the gravel announce the beginning of this year's spring track season. Now that the hurdlers are gone, Eddie's event, the 100-yard dash, is next. But today, Eddie is not running. His brother, John, will be running in his place. Mark, Hoffer, and John head to the starting blocks. Mark tells Hoffer and John that he is going to tell McCutcheon that there are ticks on the track and to keep inspecting their calves. McCutcheon and two other Centerville sprinters arrives at the blocks. Ignoring McCutcheon for the moment, Mark sees Hoffer and John inspecting their calves and asks, "Do you see any?" Hoffer replies, "No. But I heard one of the hurdlers had one." McCutcheon looks at Mark while he is inspecting his legs. Mark tells McCutcheon, "You'd better check your legs. There's a lot of ticks on the track. This place is infested with them." McCutcheon and his teammates check their legs, with one more thing to worry about for the rest of the afternoon. Mr. Crum, in the bleachers using his binoculars, sees no sign of Eddie at the starting line. Coming down from the bleachers, Mr. Crum approaches Mr. Zunday and asks, "Where's Eddie?" With a calm demeanor, Mr. Zunday replies, "I don't know. In case you've forgotten, you're the principal of this school. You've announced that fact several times this year. It's your job to keep track of attendance, not mine. Perhaps you suspended Eddie and you forgot." Clearly perceiving that he will get absolutely nowhere with Mr. Zunday, Mr. Crum hobbles toward Mr. Fraser, who is at the finish line, watching as the 100-yard dash is underway. Kathy and Paula, standing alongside Mr. Fraser, record the times. Mark takes first place, John takes second place, and Hoffer takes third place today. McCutcheon takes fourth place, as he and his teammates check their calves for ticks on their way back to their team bench. Within a few minutes, the whole Centerville team will be informed that there are ticks on the track. A few choice words from Mark are all it takes to cause mass hysteria at the Centerville bench. Desperate for information, Mr. Crum hastily walks up to Mr. Fraser, exclaiming, "Where's Eddie?" Taking control of the unwanted intrusion, Kathy brashly replies, "He dropped out of school. And it's your fault, you piece of shit. Now, get your scrawny little ass off my track. Now?" Mr. Fraser asks Mr. Crum, "What are you waiting for? Didn't you hear her?" Now quite angry, Mr. Crum exclaims, "I want to know where Eddie is." Looking at Mr. Crum right in the eyes, Kathy sternly tells him, "I told you. Eddie dropped out of school. He does not attend this school any longer. So, he is not eligible to be on the track team. Now, get your sorry ass off my track, you piece of shit. And please do us all a favor and walk through the red zone on your way out." Mr. Crumb is apparently not getting any cooperation from anyone today. Mr. Crumb walks back toward the bleachers, not appreciative of how Kathy treated him. But Kathy's remarks are the least of his concern. As he passes by the field area, Mr. Crumb raises his voice, as if he's distressed, telling Mr. Zunday, "Why didn't you tell me that Eddie dropped out of school?" Mr. Zunday informs Mr. Crumb, "The superintendent will let you know soon enough. She is taking care of this situation. I'm sure you'll be hearing from her soon." Mr. Crumb, who is now in a panic, heads back to the bleachers to calm down, which isn't likely to happen. Meanwhile, Eddie has been standing next to the equipment building, watching the meet. Eddie's vantage point near the equipment building gives a great view of the finish line for the sprinting events, and a good view of the field athletes releasing their implements. No one really notices Eddie, except Kathy, who knows exactly where he is standing. Eddie finds it kind of humorous that Mr. Crumb waddled around the venue like a cartoon character, acting like a jerk. It's no secret to Eddie why Mr. Crumb interjected himself into the meet. With the focus shifting to the distance and relay events, Eddie moves to the bleachers. Kathy catches Eddie's eye as he walks toward the bleachers to find a good seat. Also noticing Eddie, as he walks by, is Mr. Crumb. Taking a seat in the middle of the top row, Eddie now has a great view of the track as the other events get underway. Eddie finds it quite amusing how loud he can hear Braden, as he exclaims, "I'm kicking ass. Ain't nobody in this state that can kick my ass. Let's get this as kicking underway." Braden's rant just announced that the 440-yard dash is about to begin. The gun goes off, and Eddie sits back, relaxing as Braden kicks ass in the 440-yard dash. Eddie thinks back to his freshman year, when Mr. Fraser told him, Mark, and Braden to run a 440-yard dash during gym class. Recalling that they all ran a 54-second quarter mile back then, Eddie sees how Braden, who now owns the state record in the 440-yard dash, has come a long way. Knowing that it's all over now, Eddie thinks to himself that those were the good old days. But on the positive side, Eddie thinks to himself that he and Kathy are getting married, he has a house to work on, and he needs to talk with Angelo sometime in the near future. As expected, Braden wins the 440-yard dash, letting everyone know how badly they've been beaten. After the 440-yard dash, walking up the bleachers toward Eddie is Mr. Crumb. Eddie just sits back and relaxes, knowing that the school's principal no longer has any authority over him. Approaching Eddie, Mr. Crumb brazenly asks, "Edward, why haven't you been in school?" Eddie calmly replies, "Because I dropped out. I don't go to your pussy factory anymore, so get your fat piece of shit ass out of my way so I can watch the meet." Mr. Crumb tells Eddie, "I want to see you in my office in the morning." Eddie, mimicking Mr. Crumb, repeats, "I want to see you in my office in the morning." Standing up and walking away, Eddie takes a seat elsewhere in the bleachers so he can watch the rest of the meet in peace. Mr. Crumb dares not follow him. In the final event of the day, the 4x440 relay, Erica will be taking Eddie's place. At the starting line, Mark, Braden, Johnson, and Erica all pretend to check their legs for ticks. McCutcheon and his 4x440 relay team are constantly checking their legs as well. McCutcheon asks, "So, where's Eddie?" Mark whispers to McCutcheon, "Steroids," resurrecting the rumor that led to McCutcheon's takedown over the indoor track season. It will be interesting to see how far Mark's one-word comment will go this spring. As the race gets underway, Eddie is surprised how strong the 4x440 relay team is. Mark, the anchorman today, crosses the finish line about 45 seconds before McCutcheon. With Erika taking Eddie's place on the 4x440 relay team, the composite time is only 10 seconds slower, so Eddie figures the relay team can win every race this season. With his former team taking first, second, and third place in the 100-yard dash, and destroying the competition in the 4x440 relay, Eddie is fully convinced that he is no longer needed on the team. Coming down out of the bleachers to join his former teammates, Eddie heads straight for Kathy. Eddie tells Kathy, "Congratulations. You guys won." Kathy replies, "Yeah. But it wasn't the same without you here." With some wisdom, Eddie explains, "I'll be gone next year anyway, and you'll have 3 more years at this job." Seeing Eddie's point, Kathy sighs and replies, "Yeah. I guess you're right." Kathy gives Eddie a hug and tells him, "Well, it's time to go home. Come with me." Eddie asks Kathy, "What? No pizza." Kathy replies, "The team is probably going out for pizza, but I'd rather be with you." Eddie tells Kathy, "It's a date." Remembering that she is not quite ready to leave, Kathy tells Eddie, "Oh crap. I forgot. I'm an assistant coach again. I've got to help put all this shit away. Then, we can go." Kathy helps Wendy put away the equipment as the team and the coaches head to the locker room. As Kathy and Eddie were talking, not even Mr. Fraser has noticed that Eddie walked down from the bleachers onto the track. But neither Mr. Fraser nor Mr. Zunday knew Eddie was at the meet. While Wendy, Kathy, Paula, and Barbara put away the equipment, Dr. Brooks walks down from the bleachers over to Eddie. Introducing herself, Dr. Noreen Brooks says, "Eddie, perhaps you don't remember me. I'm Dr. Brooks, the school superintendent. Do you have a moment?" Eddie asks, "Sure. What's up?" Dr. Brooks asks, "Eddie, tell me what happened. I heard you dropped out of school. Is that true?" Eddie explains the whole situation in detail to Dr. Brooks, including Mr. Crum vowing that Eddie will never graduate. Dr. Brooks, hearing Mr. Zunday's and Mr. Fraser's account earlier in the week, and now Eddie's side of the story, is very concerned. Dr. Brooks tells Eddie, "I'm definitely going to do something about this." Eddie cordially replies, "Thanks, but don't waste your time. I'm not coming back here." Eddie thanks Dr. Brooks for being concerned and walks away. Dr. Brooks, who was very bothered by hearing what happened, is very much more disturbed now than before. Eddie meets up with Kathy, and they head out in separate cars. Meeting at Kathy's house, they drive together to the Greek restaurant, where they have a quiet meal together. The rest of the team is getting pizza and celebrating their victory, but Eddie and Kathy are not in the mood for celebration today. After dinner, Kathy and Eddie take the long way home, driving to the house they bought together. Sitting by their pool, they manage to leave the world's cares behind them, at least for a while. For the next week, Eddie is still absent from school. By now, it's clear to Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday that Eddie is not coming back. Neither of them is happy, to say the least. Mr. Crum, expecting to hear some news, gets none from anyone. Mr. Crum is very worried. He caught a glimpse of Eddie talking with the school superintendent after the track meet last week. Mr. Crum can only imagine what that conversation was all about. Instead of being in school, Eddie is making a small garden in his and Kathy's new house. Buying a park bench, Eddie makes a small area between the woods and the pool where he and Kathy can sit. Eddie also spends time getting the pool up and running. Heating the pool to a nice warm 92 degrees, Eddie has a nice surprise waiting for Kathy. Since the house is on well water, Eddie replaces the water filters, making sure everything is working correctly. Going on a shopping spree, Eddie buys some pool towels and a few items for the poolside. Remembering that Kathy wanted a patio table where she can do homework, Eddie picked up a patio set too. And since it's the spring, Eddie cut the lawn, what little of it there is to cut. The weekend comes along, and Eddie drives to Kathy's house in the morning. Before they go out to get pizza, Eddie tells Kathy, "Hey, get your swimsuit." Kathy replies, "Why? The pool isn't open yet." Eddie tells her, "Just bring it. I'll explain later." Kathy figures that Eddie might want to go through the portal to a summer's beach somewhere. They go out for their usual Saturday pizza, running into Mark and Paula, who have the same Saturday lunch plans. They have a seat together, and are all glad to be one happy group again. Since Eddie is curious about what is going on at school, he asks Mark, "So, what's up at Mr. Crumb's Pussy Factory?" Mark tells Eddie, "Well, Mr. Fraser is really ticked off. Mr. Crumb is trying to talk to him, but Mr. Fraser keeps ignoring him." Eddie laughs, telling Mark, "Good. Mr. Fraser wins on the track and off." Eddie asks, "Is the little Chucky back in school yet?" Mark informs him, "No. But O'Brien is back. He looks really sick. He's lost 10 pounds. Eddie remarks, "He doesn't have 10 pounds to lose. He's a walking skeleton." Mark elaborates, telling Eddie, "O'Brien got dehydrated and had to go to the hospital. They say he almost died because all his muscles broke down." Sick of a few of the characters at school, Eddie laughs and comments, "Jimmy O'Crying doesn't have any muscles." When the pizza arrives, Eddie asks Mark and Paula, "Hey, do you guys want to take a look at what I did to the house?" Paula, who seems to get excited about these sort of things, answers, "Sure, we'd love to." Eddie tells everyone a few of the things he's done around the house, but leaves out the surprise that the pool water is nice and warm. Eddie does, however, tell Mark and Paula, "Before you come over, get your swimsuits." Paula exclaims, "The water is way too cold to go swimming." Brushing off the comment, Eddie tells her, "You can get your toes wet, like you did that day on the beach last year when you guys were acting like you're getting old." That was enough to convince Paula to get her swimsuit. Paula certainly doesn't want to be accused of getting old again. After lunch, Mark and Paula pick up their swimsuits and follow Eddie and Kathy to the house. Driving up the driveway, Kathy sees the patio tables and exclaims, "Eddie, you got us a patio table." Eddie replies, "Yeah. Now you and Paula can sit out here and study when it's nice out." Getting out of the car, they walk out to the pool area as Mark and Paula drive up right behind them. Before Mark and Paula get out of the Jeep, Eddie points to the park bench between the woods and the pool and tells Kathy, "The long way home." Seeing the park bench with some nice landscaping around it, Kathy exclaims, "Oh, Eddie. It's so beautiful. Our very own park. I love it." Kathy notices that Eddie bought a whole lot more than just a table and chairs. Eddie bought a whole patio set with a few lounge chairs. Walking up to the pool area, Paula comments, "Nice." Eddie tells everyone, "I was thinking we could put our swimsuits on and lay out and relax for a while." Now on board with the plan, everyone goes inside to get into their swimsuits. While they are inside waiting for Mark and Paula, Eddie mentions to Kathy, "Taste the water." Not expecting anything too special, Kathy gets a plastic cup and tastes the water from the tap. Kathy tells Eddie, "Wow. This is like water. It's way better than the water at home." Eddie tells Kathy, "It's well water." Mark and Paula are ready, and they head out to the pool. Putting his toes in the water, Eddie makes sure the water is still warm. Kathy looks at the pool bottom, secretly looking for frogs. Standing next to the water, Kathy mentions, "I really wish we could go swimming. The water looks so nice." Eddie pushes Kathy into the pool, and Kathy screams, expecting the worst as she lands in the water. Eddie jumps in right after hearing Kathy exclaim, "Wow. I can't believe this is our pool. It's so warm." Mark and Paula, wasting no time, also jump in. Kathy tells Eddie, "This is really beautiful." Eddie hands Kathy the floating pool thermometer, which reads 92 degrees. When Eddie threw Kathy into the water, she was expecting 62 degrees, which is a bit cold to swim in. With the water being warmer than the air, they all float around and hang out in the pool for a few hours. At 92 degrees, however, the pool is a bit too warm for swimming laps. Mark asks Eddie, "So, this is what you've been up to in the last week?" Eddie replies, "Mostly. And I've got the perfect place for a home gym in the basement." Kathy asks, "Where?" Eddie explains, "In front of the wall with the door and the windows. There's a nice view. The other three walls are concrete." Kathy agrees, telling Eddie, "Yeah. That would be really nice, looking outside instead of concrete walls when we work out." Paula asks, "And all the money for this came from buying and selling gold through the portal?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. The same place the money for Mark's truck came from. I've made a few trips over the last week. Actually, I've made a lot of trips over the last week. I probably made more money in 1 week than Mr. Crumb makes in an entire year." Paula exclaims, "Wow. We're not calling that the portal anymore. From now on, we're calling it the bank." Mark, taking a good look at where Kathy and Eddie will be living, mentions, "I'm going to the bank later." Paula agrees, telling Mark, "I'm coming with you." Kathy then mentions, "Maybe you guys," and catching herself, continues, "can come and use the pool even when we're not here." Kathy was going to tell Paula, "Maybe you guys can buy a house around here too, so we can all be together." Kathy, learning that Mark and Paula will be getting married from a trip to the future, caught herself before she spilled the beans. Paula replies, "That is really nice of you. Thank you." Kathy got herself out of that one nicely. After a nice afternoon in the pool, Mark and Paula get ready to head out. Mark, liking the way the phrase sounds, tells Eddie, "I'm going to the bank." Mark then tells Paula, "You'll have to show me how this bank thing works." Eddie comments, "Kathy wanted to live on 2nd Street, but we got stuck here instead, courtesy of the bank." Kathy exclaims, "Not." Paula asks, "What's on 2nd Street? Kathy exclaims, "Haunted houses. That's what." Paula tells Kathy, "Wow. Now, I want to go see. Where is it?" Kathy explains, 2nd Street is near the railroad tracks. There are 4 houses there and they are all haunted. And 2 of the houses are backwards. The back of the house faces the street." Paula asks, "And people live there?" Kathy replies, "Yeah. Probably Mr. Crumb and Mr. O'Brien." Everyone laughs, but who knows? Maybe Mr. Crumb and Mr. O'Brien really do live on 2nd Street. After Mark and Paula leave, Eddie and Kathy float around their pool a while longer. Kathy puts her legs around Eddie's waist and her arms around his neck, telling him, "I love you so much." Kathy kisses Eddie and tells her, "Our first kiss in our pool." As they float around the pool, Eddie asks, "I wonder where your star will be in the sky." Kathy, with her head on Eddie's shoulder, tells him, "Someday we're going to find my star. But, for right now, I've got a lot of catching up to do." Kathy, holding her heart-shaped pendant with the inscription that reads, "One kiss for every star in the sky," gives Eddie a kiss, followed by many more. With only a few billion more to go, they'll be in the pool for a while. Another week goes by and Eddie gets a lot done on his and Kathy's house. On Monday morning, Eddie heads out to see Angelo about getting a job. Eddie's mother, however, informs him, "The school wants to see you tomorrow morning. They ask that you be there at 9 a.m. Eddie asks, "Why?" Eddie's mother tells him, "Oh, Eddie, you know why. They want your father there too." Eddie tells her, "Okay, I'll be there." Eddie knows this is going to be good. Perhaps he'll get to watch his father break another desk, or he'll hear his father ask Mr. Crumb for an update on how well the Pussy Factory is operating. So, Eddie figures why miss out on the entertainment. Eddie heads out to see Angelo. Eddie drives up during the mid-morning, and Angelo is surprised to see him.
Angelo asks, "Hey, Eddie. What's up?" Eddie asks, "Are you hiring?" Angelo answers, "Yeah. I can always use some help around here." Angelo works 10 to 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, and he could be busier if he wanted to be. Eddie explains the situation at school to Angelo, explaining how Mr. Crum set him up. Angelo, understanding completely, tells Eddie, "You can start whenever you want." That certainly was the best news Eddie received in the last 3 weeks. But Eddie does inform Angelo that he might have to go back to school. Angelo, who has known Eddie quite well since Eddie has been in the 7th grade, knows Eddie's abilities, and that he is a good worker. Angelo assures Eddie that a job is waiting for him when he wants it. Tuesday morning comes along, and brings with it the mystery meeting at the high school. Eddie and his father drive separately, since Eddie's father has to return to the job site after the meeting. Eddie walks into the administration area and asks Mrs. Marlowe, "What's this meeting all about?" Mrs. Marlowe tells Eddie, "It's about getting you back into school." Eddie tells Mrs. Marlowe, "I was hoping you were going to tell me to clean out my locker. I wasn't expecting to waste my time with that asshole, Mr. Crum." Eddie knows he has the upper hand, so he crosses the line every chance he gets. Eddie then asks Mrs. Marlowe, "Does Mr. Crum have my gold medal for kicking the shit out of the Chucky?" Mrs. Marlowe, who overheard the discussion about the medal a few weeks ago, smiles and tells Eddie, "I don't think you'll be getting that medal today." Eddie's father walks into the administration area at 8:58 a.m. While they are waiting, Eddie's father and Eddie talk about the house Eddie and Kathy bought. Eddie's father explains to Eddie that he should pipe the downspouts for the rain gutters far away from the house to keep the water away from the foundation. As they talk about that project, Mr. Boganskaya looks at his watch and tells Mrs. Marlowe, "This meeting was supposed to start at 9 a.m. It's now 10 after." Mrs. Marlowe informs Mr. Boganskaya, "Everyone's not here yet." Eddie's father replies, "And the count just went down by one. I have work to do." Mr. Boganskaya stands up and leaves. Following his father, Eddie tells Mrs. Marlowe, "Make that down by two." Eddie and his father walk through the lobby and unexpectedly run into Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday. Eddie has little choice but to talk with Mr. Fraser. Not knowing what to say, Mr. Fraser tells Eddie, "I heard what happened. For what it's worth, no one believes Mr. Crum." Changing the subject, Eddie tells his former coach, "I saw your meet against Centerville. You guys did really good." Mr. Fraser tells Eddie, "The whole team missed you." Eddie tells Mr. Fraser, "The team is strong. They did fine without me. You'll have an awesome season." Not wanting to prolong the misery, Mr. Boganskaya tells Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunday, "It's nice to see you guys again. But unfortunately, I need to get back to work. You guys can talk with Eddie if you want." Mr. Zunday asks Mr. Boganskaya, "Aren't you coming to the meeting?" Mr. Boganskaya replies, "The meeting was at 9 a.m. I don't have time to waste on whatever that Mr. Crum has to say today." Mr. Boganskaya has customers who need to have projects completed at a certain time. He does not have time to sit around and wait all morning for Mr. Crum. Mr. Zunday tells Mr. Boganskaya, "The school superintendent called this meeting. She really wants Eddie to graduate." Eddie informs his father, "She talked to me at the track meet about 2 weeks ago. I told her not to bother." Mr. Zunday persuades Mr. Boganskaya, "Why don't you come and hear what she has to say? The meeting is in the library. If you don't like what you hear, you can walk out whenever you want." Eddie tells his father, "I might as well go, since I'm already here." Mr. Boganskaya, Eddie, Mr. Fraser, and Mr. Zunday head to the library together, all hoping that their time is not wasted. On the door to the library, Eddie sees a sign stating that the library is closed. Upon walking in, Eddie sees Dr. Brooks, the school superintendent, Mr. Crum, Braden, and a few administrators he's never seen before. Eddie, wondering why Braden is present, gives him a fist bump, telling him, "Yo, bro. What are you doing here?" Braden, who appears very concerned, replies, "I don't know. I think I'm in big trouble, but I didn't do anything." Eddie tells Braden, "You're good. It's me that they want to talk to today." Eddie, his father, and his former coaches take a seat, wondering why so many people are present. No one, except for Dr. Brooks, knows the full agenda of today's meeting. Once everyone is present, Dr. Brooks opens the meeting, stating, "Good morning. Thank you all for coming. I have called this meeting today to investigate the reason behind why Edward Boganskaya has allegedly dropped out of school. While I have heard conflicting reports, the tone behind Edward dropping out of school simply does not resonate well with me. Today, hopefully, I can get some answers to a few questions that I have. Before I begin, I want to get something straight. Please understand that this is a public, not a private meeting. The events leading to this meeting transpired in a public setting, and they will be resolved in a like manner." Eddie's father whispers to Eddie, "At least she's a lot more cordial than that so-called principal around here." Dr. Brooks continues, "When a student with reasonably good academic performance drops out of school 3 months before graduation, it certainly raises a red flag and attracts a lot of attention. It is especially noteworthy when the grades of that student suggest that they would have graduated anyway, even by putting forth minimal academic effort. I'm sure all of us sitting here in this room today can clearly see the conundrum." Mr. Zunde whispers to Mr. Fraser, "I've not heard her speak in this way before. This is going to get interesting." Dr. Brooks continues, asking Eddie, "Edward, would you be so kind as to explain to all of us why you dropped out of school?" Eddie replies, "It's simple. Mr. Crum wanted me to help the Chucky out by getting the district attorney to drop the charges against the little Chucky. When I told him that I wouldn't do that, Mr. Crum told me that I won't graduate from this school and that he'll make sure of it. There's no point coming back here anymore if I'm not going to graduate. So, I dropped out. I think you people call that logic." Dr. Brooks, who is no idiot and already knows the truth surrounding this whole situation, replies, "Wow. That's really surprising to me." Focusing her attention to Mr. Crum, Dr. Brooks asks Mr. Crum, "Maurice, do you recall telling Edward that, if he does not help Charles Black, that he would not graduate from high school?" Mr. Crum, replying brashly to Dr. Brooks, exclaims, "I said no such thing. He's making the whole thing up. I said nothing of the sort." Present with a few others when Mr. Crum told Eddie that he would not graduate, Braden whispers under his breath, "That's a bunch of bullshit." Dr. Brooks, and everyone else in the room, hears Braden's comment. Dr. Brooks bluntly asks Mr. Crum, "Does Charles Black have a police record?" Mr. Crum replies, "Not that I know of." Dr. Brooks replies, "Oh, I see." Turning her attention to everyone in the room, Dr. Brooks asks, "Is anyone in this room aware whether Charles Black has a police record?" Mr. Zunde replies, "The school is well aware that Charles Black has a record." Dr. Brooks asks Mr. Zunde, "Would you please tell us how you became aware that Charles Black has a police record?" Mr. Zunde replies, "Mr. Gabriel, the local police captain, informed us that Charles has a police record about a year ago when Charles assaulted Erika, one of the members of the track team. Captain Gabriel mentioned, at the time, that Charles has had 3 drug busts and 4 assault charges." Dr. Brooks asks, "Was anyone else made aware of this?" Mr. Zunde replies, "If I recall correctly, Mr. Fraser, Erika, Mr. Crum, and myself were in a meeting in Mr. Crum's office when that information was revealed." Dr. Brooks glances over at Mr. Crum with a look giving the unmistakable impression that he has been busted. Dr. Brooks, taking full advantage of Braden's personality, asks, "Axel, I perceive by your comment a moment ago that you might have a differing opinion as to what happened. Am I correct?" Braden boldly replies, "Yes, I do." Mr. Crumb is quite surprised that Braden answered Dr. Brooks using proper English. Dr. Brooks asks Braden, "Axel, would you be kind enough to share your opinion of what happened, from your perspective, with all of us?" Braden, who is ticked off at Mr. Crumb, replies, "We all heard Mr. Crumb ram that shit down Eddie's throat. Mr. Crumb told Eddie he won't graduate if he won't help out Chucky." Dr. Brooks asks, "Who else heard it?" Braden replies, "Mark, Johnson, Mitchell, and Bobby B. We were hiding near the bathroom listening when all this went down. We knew something was up when Mr. Crumb asked Eddie how his hip was doing and when he can practice again. Mr. Crumb doesn't give a shit about Eddie's hip or the track team. So, we hid near the bathrooms to hear what was going on." Braden certainly tells it like it is. Mr. Crumb interrupts the meeting, stating, "They are all making it up. They've all clearly colluded together to make up this story." Eddie, who has nothing to lose, stands up and exclaims, "Crumb, you're full of more shit than will fill the Grand Canyon." "I haven't spoken to Braden, Johnson, Mitchell, or Bobby B. since I walked out of your pussy factory. And I've had it with your crap, which is why I dropped out." Mr. Crumb tells Eddie, "Edward, please calm down. I'm sure everyone here does not want to hear your temper tantrum." Eddie, who has had enough of Mr. Crumb, continues, albeit a slight bit calmer, "I have a job. Kathy and I just bought a house in the town behind the school. I don't need your school or your diploma. And even if I did graduate from this school, if your name is on my diploma, the first thing I'm doing when I get home is tearing it up and throwing it out." Silence falls over the room as Eddie walks over to the table where Mr. Crumb is seated. Mr. Crumb, seeing a 6 foot, 5 inch, 245-pound disgruntled student walking toward him, raises his voice, telling Eddie, "Now, Edward, please calm down. I'm sure these people don't want to hear your ranting." Eddie sternly tells Mr. Crumb, "I didn't ask for your opinion. So, shut up." Eddie picks up the 4 foot table where Mr. Crumb is seated, forcefully throwing it across the room, breaking two of the legs off as it collides with a bookshelf. Now that Eddie has everyone's attention, standing in front of Mr. Crumb, Eddie tells him, "For once in your life, Crumb, why don't you tell the truth? You've been after the track team ever since I got here. You were after Kathy and Paula last year. And you're constantly after Braden, who breaks up at least a dozen fights every year because you, and your pussy factory, can't. And then what do? You threaten to suspend Braden for being involved in a fight. And then, Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser have to step in to keep your sorry ass in line." Eddie turns around and heads back to his seat, as Mr. Crumb starts shaking and turns an eerie shade of white. Reconsidering, Eddie realizes that he is not finished with his diatribe. Turning around and approaching Mr. Crumb a second time, Eddie exclaims, "And why are you protecting the Chucky? You're always protecting him. And then when the Chucky kicked the shit out of you, all you did was to send him to detention. Now that I'm thinking about it, if that's the price to pay for kicking your ass, I should tell everyone in the school." Acting as if he is making a public announcement, Eddie exclaims, "That's right, everyone. If you kick the shit out of Mr. Crumb, all you'll get is 3 days of detention." Eddie continues and tells Mr. Crumb, "I bet you'll have a lot of takers. And it's the same thing with that moron, Jimmy O'Brien. He could burn the school down and you'd let him off." Eddie again returns to his seat as Dr. Brooks comments, "Okay, good. We all now have a clear understanding what Eddie's side of the story is." Mr. Fraser whispers to Mr. Zunday, "I wish I could put him in the starting blocks right now with all this energy. He'll break some sort of record." Catching a glimpse of Dr. Brooks, Mr. Zunday whispers back to Mr. Fraser, "Here it comes. She's going to bury Crumb." Dr. Brooks just allows the meeting to move on naturally and is not the least bit concerned with Eddie breaking a table or with Braden's language. Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser will preserve the peace if necessary. Focusing her attention back to Mr. Crum, Dr. Brooks asks, Maurice, can you think of any reason why Eddie would spontaneously drop out of school? After all, he is very well positioned to break the national record in the 100-yard dash this year. That honor could get him a scholarship to just about any college or university that he wants. Not to mention that it would certainly bring a lot of positive attention to this school. It will also give excellent exposure to our other athletic programs as well. And it's not like Eddie is failing anything. He's got a mid to high B average. Mr. Crum replies, you saw how he reacted. He'll never get into college with that attitude. Eddie replies to Mr. Crum's accusation, stating, and we'll never forget how you reacted when you ran into the discus last year. At least I act my age. You acted like an 8-year-old pansy. No, wait. I'm wrong. You acted more like a 3-year-old. Eddie starts imitating Mr. Crum from a year ago, babbling like a baby, who threw the discus at me. I demand to know. I'm going to suspend them. Who was it? Eddie's comment silences Mr. Crum and everyone else attending the meeting today. Everyone present is aware of the incident with the discus last year. Mr. Bogenskaya whispers to Eddie, this guy is so full of shit. He's not even qualified to be the janitor. Hearing Mr. Bogenskaya's comment, Mr. Crum announces, I heard that. Mr. Bogenskaya tells Mr. Crum, good. They may call you the principal around here, but, to me, you're nothing but a pussy. I may only have an 8th grade education, but I'm a whole lot wiser than you are. You'd have to be a very special kind of idiot to believe anything you say. And, by the way, how's your desk doing? I hear that it's still broken. You know, you could just take it down to the shop. They could fix it for you there. Or, maybe you could even fix it yourself. If you do, please call me. I'd like to watch. Everyone present laughs at Mr. Bogenskaya's comment, except for Mr. Crum. Mr. Crum dares not to respond to Mr. Bogenskaya. Getting back to the original question, Dr. Brooks asks Mr. Crum, Maurice, please let me know if there is any reason at all that you can think of why Eddie would drop out of school. And please do not evade my question this time, or answer my question with any further irrelevant observations. Mr. Crum replies, I can't think of any reason, but there must be one. Dr. Brooks responds, there must be a reason. I see. But you do not know the reason. Mr. Crum brashly replies, kids drop out of school all the time for no reason. Dr. Brooks replies with a sarcastic, really? I was not aware of that. Dr. Brooks heard exactly what she suspected she would hear. The only reason she arranged this meeting is to confirm what she knew all along and to get everything out in the open. Dr. Brooks could allow the meeting to go on, but it will be more of the same. She has already made her decision on what action she was going to take several days earlier. Hearing nothing new today that would change her mind, Dr. Brooks takes out a paper summarizing her decision. Wrapping up the meeting, Dr. Brooks announces, I think I've heard enough today. To me, it's very clear what is going on here, and there are certain things that clearly must be addressed. Mr. Crum sits in his chair, no longer behind a desk, with his arms crossed. Mr. Crum, holding his head up high, is waiting patiently to hear the superintendent's decision to expel Eddie from the school once and for all. After all, the broken desk across the room is evidence of Eddie's demeanor, highly suggestive of the need for strict disciplinary action. And a trail of destruction in the principal's office adds to the evidence collection. On the other side of the room, Mr. Zunde whispers to Mr. Fraser, she's going to kick Crum's ass, and kick it hard. I can see it coming. Mr. Fraser smiles and whispers back, I'm just glad that I was invited and get to watch. Dr. Brooks continues, it is the official position of the administration that we sincerely hope that Edward will elect to return to school. If he chooses to return to school, Edward will graduate with his class. I will make certain of that myself. There is nothing in Edward's record that is even remotely suggestive that he would not have graduated anyway, and I might add, with reasonably good grades. Also, if Edward chooses to return to school, he will not be responsible for any work that he's missed, or any work dependent on the course material he's missed. Eddie is relieved to hear what Dr. Brooks announced. But that is nothing compared to what is coming. As Mr. Crumb turns beet red, Dr. Brooks announces, I have also decided to make an administrative change in the high school. This change is to further harden the administrative change made several years ago when John Davies lost his football scholarship due to certain events that transpired on campus at that time. Effective immediately, Mr. Fraser, Mr. Chubin, Miss Parteno, and Miss Hamilton will no longer report to the principal, Mr. Crumb. Instead, the entire physical education staff will now report directly to Dr. Zunde, who, as most of you know, reports directly to the school board. And I'm going to add this. If Edward does not return and graduate, I will give serious consideration regarding further restructuring the administration of this school. And, Mr. Crumb, I sincerely hope you will be at each and every track meet to cheer for your school's team. I will be at each and every meet myself, and expect to see you there. Silence falls over the room as Dr. Brooks finishes her summary. Even Braden figures out that Dr. Brooks just told Mr. Crumb that he will be fired or demoted if Eddie doesn't graduate. It also sounds like to Braden that Mr. Crumb, instructed to attend all the track meets, has been given detention by the superintendent. Mr. Crumb, who was proudly sitting in his chair with his arms crossed, is now staring at the floor, not believing what he just heard. Mr. Fraser is greatly relieved that he no longer reports to Mr. Crumb. With the expression on Mr. Fraser's face, you'd think his team won the gold, silver, and bronze medal in every event at the state invitational meet. Mr. Zunde is quite surprised to hear the announcement, completely removing the school's athletic department from under Mr. Crumb's authority. Mr. Zunde is also happy that he will not have to address any further confrontations between the physical education staff and Mr. Crumb, which were quite a frequent occurrence. And Mr. Boganskaya is glad to finally hear a voice of reason in the room. Dr. Brooks concludes, Edward, I hope that you will give serious consideration to the school's offer. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact me. My door is always open to you. I hope to hear from you by the end of the week. And unless anyone has any questions or comments, I believe we are done here for today. No one has any questions, so the meeting is adjourned. Mr. Crumb leaves the room first, heading back to his office to sit behind his broken desk. Braden heads back to class, without a late pass. Mr. Zunde, who is very curious, asks Dr. Brooks, by the way, why did you pick Braden? Why not Mitchell, or perhaps Johnson? After all, Mitchell is an honors student, and may come across as a little more credible than Braden. Dr. Brooks replies, oh, that's very simple, Gerhard. The whole school will know what happened during this meeting because Axel Braden was here. Caught a bit off guard, Mr. Zunde smiles and says, I should have guessed. Eddie's father heads off to work, and Eddie heads off to who knows where. With the offer put on the table by Dr. Brooks, Eddie really has no choice but to return to school. And Eddie has nothing to lose by returning. It's not likely that Mr. Crumb will give Eddie, the track team, or Mr. Fraser any more problems. Not knowing where to go, Eddie heads to the university to tell Kathy the news. Out of school by 11 a.m., Tuesday is Kathy's short day at school. Eddie arrives at the college with plenty of time to catch her. Waiting in the parking lot, Eddie feels a bit more relaxed than he has in the last few weeks. Class change occurs, and students walk in all directions, heading to their next destination. Kathy and Paula walk into the parking lot and head in different directions. Seeing that Eddie is waiting for her, Kathy hopes for the best. Kathy can tell by the look on Eddie's face that he has good news. Kathy gives Eddie a hug and a kiss, and asks him, "How did it go this morning?" Eddie tells Kathy, "You should have been there." Dr. Brooks buried Mr. Crumb. All excited, Kathy asks, "So, are you going to go back to school?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. Dr. Brooks told me that I'm going to graduate, and that I'm not responsible for the work I missed." Kathy exclaims, "Eddie, that's awesome. You can run for the team again." Telling Kathy what he really feels, Eddie whispers to her, "The track team is the only reason I'm going back. But don't tell anyone." Kathy replies, "My lips are sealed." Eddie tells Kathy, "Here, let me open them," as he gives his sweetheart a kiss. Kathy asks Eddie, "Now what?" Eddie tells her, "I think I'm going to go over to the house and do some work. I won't have as much time when I'm back in school." Kathy tells Eddie, "I'm coming with you. I'm sitting by the pool and working on my project." As they head out, Eddie tells Kathy, "See you at home." As Kathy drives to their house, the words, "See you at home," resonate in Kathy's head. After a 3-week absence, Eddie returns to school on Monday. Getting to school early, Eddie takes his usual seat near the window, waiting for the tribe to arrive. Braden walks in and exclaims, "Yo, bro. Are you running?" Eddie replies, "I hope so." Mark arrives next, who already knew Eddie was going to show up today. One by one, the tribe arrives and is back together again. Best of all, they all can't wait for track practice later today. Bobby B tells Eddie, "It's good to see you back." Eddie replies, "I had to come back. I got word that the shot put hasn't been cleaned in a few weeks. Someone has to keep you in line." Hearing that comment, everyone knows Eddie is back. As the tribe is catching up, another surprise walks through the door. Today is Chuck's first day back to school as well. After being patched back together during his 2-week stay at the hospital, Chuck has spent a few days in jail and was bailed out. The whole school has heard that Eddie kicked the shit out of Chucky. Everyone now sees Chucky with one arm in a sling, the other in a cast, a crooked nose, and 6 broken teeth. It is now clear what happens when you intentionally throw a javelin at someone who is a lot bigger and stronger than you are. Miss Amherst walks into the classroom, announcing, "Eddie, it's so good to see you back again." The class cheers, making Eddie feel welcome. No mention is made about Chucky returning. If there were, the class would likely boo. After taking attendance, Miss Amherst moves on to her lesson for today. Looking through her material, Miss Amherst tells the class, "Today, we are going to do something a little special before I move on to today's lesson." Miss Amherst occasionally gives a real-world application of the class material, so the students have a better understanding of what they learn. Miss Amherst begins today's lesson by telling the class, "Since the track season is fully underway, today we are going to go over how to throw an airborne instrument, such as the discus, shot put, javelin, or hammer, the farthest possible distance. Everyone should know, by now, the angle that a projectile should theoretically be released in a vacuum in order to allow it to travel as far as possible. Can anyone tell me that angle?" Nearly every student answers, 45 degrees. Miss Amherst replies, "And you all are correct. Now, if I was, for example, to throw the discus, what would be the optimal angle for its release?" The class again answers, 45 degrees. Surprisingly, Miss Amherst tells the class, "Well, not quite. And today we will learn why." Miss Amherst explains to the class, "The optimal release angle would be 45 degrees in a vacuum, but, since we don't throw a discus in a vacuum, 45 degrees might not actually be the optimal angle. A factor called wind resistance, or air resistance, comes into play. Air resistance introduces something called drag. The resistance of an airborne object moving through the air is dependent on 3 things. The first is the surface area of the object in the direction it is moving. The second is the aerodynamic properties of the object. And the third is the velocity of the object in motion. Is everyone following me so far? No one says anything, so Miss Amherst continues. Miss Amherst addresses the class, so, we have four airborne implements in track and field. They are the discus, hammer, shot put, and javelin. Which one do you think has the least resistance while it's moving through the air? Mitchell replies, the javelin. Miss Amherst tells Mitchell, theoretically, that is correct. So, we will go with that. Now, which of the implements would have the greatest resistance while it's moving through the air? Mitchell again answers, the hammer. Miss Amherst tells the class, that is also correct. Not only does the hammer have the greatest surface area in the direction in which it is moving, but the wire and handle introduce an interesting problem, as the wire and handle rotate as the implement sails through the air. Getting to the shot put and discus, Miss Amherst asks, between the discus and the shot put, which implement would have the greatest surface area in the usual orientation that it is thrown? Half the class answers the shot put, and the other half answers the discus. Giving the class the answer, Miss Amherst tells them, the answer is the shot put, but not by much. Summarizing, Miss Amherst explains, so, in the order of least to most air resistance, are the javelin, discus, shot put, and the hammer. Miss Amherst then gets to the core of her discussion, telling the class, assuming zero air resistance, the optimal angle for the release of any of the field implements is 45 degrees. Once air resistance is introduced, the optimal angle will actually decrease with respect to the horizontal. The decrease in the optimal angle is proportional to the frontal surface area of the implement exposed to the air in the direction in which it is moving. Miss Amherst then asks the class, using this information, which implement would be thrown at an angle closest to 45 degrees to obtain the farthest distance? Eddie answers, the javelin. Miss Amherst tells the class, and that would be correct, since it has the smallest surface area exposed to the air in its direction of movement. Miss Amherst then tells the class, a competitive throw of the javelin would best be done at an angle slightly less than 45 degrees, say, perhaps 40 to 43 degrees. Trying to get the students to understand the physics behind her point, Miss Amherst poses the question, what would happen if the javelin were to be released at an angle of 80 degrees with respect to the horizontal? Mitchell replies, it would come back to Earth and land a few feet in front of you. And you'd definitely not win. The class laughs as Miss Amherst announces, that is correct on both fronts. Miss Amherst then asks, what would happen if the javelin was released at an angle of, say, 5 degrees? Braden replies, you'd get your ass kicked, like Chucky did. The entire class starts laughing hysterically, including Miss Amherst. After composing herself, Miss Amherst replies to Braden, telling him, well, I can't say that I disagree with you. If the javelin was released at a 5-degree angle, it cannot be construed as an attempt at a competitive throw. Eddie and the tribe continue to laugh as Chucky sits, not being able to cross his arms, pouting. Miss Amherst then goes on to explain, so, in competition, when releasing the javelin, discus, shot put, or hammer, the optimal angle is actually going to be somewhere between 35 and 44 degrees. The implements with the greater surface area in the direction of travel will best be released at a lower angle within that range. Eddie, for the discus, slightly over or near 40 degrees will be optimal. And Bobby B, for the shot put, slightly less than 40 degrees will be your optimal angle. Eddie and Bobby B, take a few notes, as this information will help their performance. Focusing her attention on Chucky, Miss Amherst comments, and Charles, releasing the javelin at a 5-degree angle into a field of runners is clearly not intended to be a competitive throw. The class again laughs hysterically at Chucky, who may have learned something today. But if Chucky didn't learn his lesson 3.5 weeks ago when Eddie took him apart, he likely never will. Later that day, before track practice, Eddie heads to the physical education office and asks Mr. Fraser, am I still on the team? Mr. Fraser tells Eddie, yes, of course. I recorded your absence as an injury, which is what it was. Mr. Fraser asks, how is your hip doing? Eddie replies, it's good. I've been working out, swimming, and doing a few sprints. Mr. Fraser tells Eddie, great. I'll see you out on the track. Eddie gets dressed and heads out to the track with the rest of the tribe, who are all glad to see him back in action again. Mr. Fraser, unknown to Eddie, is exceedingly happy because he no longer has to report to Mr. Crumb, and he has Eddie to thank for that. On the way out to the track, Eddie asks Kathy, so, what are my events? Kathy replies, Mr. Fraser wants you to run the 100-yard dash, and he wants you to throw the discus. I think he wants to keep John in the 4x440 relay for Wednesday's meet, but he might need you in the 220-yard dash with Mark. Eddie tells Kathy, wow. A meet on Wednesday. I guess I've really been out of it. Kathy informs Eddie, we're up against Riverdale. They have two good sprinters this year, so Mr. Fraser might have to move things around depending on where they put their people. The rumor is they can beat Hoffa and John, but not you or Mark. The competition is a lot stronger this year. Eddie tells Kathy, well, I hope I'm ready. Mr. Fraser has everyone sit on the bleachers and announces that the team will be running his favorite drill for the sprinters and distance group. The drill, a variation of fartlek training, intermixes distance running with sprinting. To the athletes, this means that they will have a hard workout today. But, with a few more meets to go, and the state invitational meet right around the corner, everyone must be at their best. During this drill, the distance runners will be running on the outside of the track. After every mile, they will drop to the inside of the track and run 440 yards as fast as they can as if it was the final lap of the race. They will then drop to the outside of the track and run another mile. When they are fatigued, the distances are changed to a half mile of distance running coupled with a 220-yard sprint. The sprinters will be sprinting on the inside of the track for one lap, or 440 yards, then drop to the outside, taking one recovery lap with the distance group. After the recovery lap, they will sprint for another 440 yards. Once they cannot sprint for 440 yards effectively, the sprinting distance is dropped to 220 yards with a 440-yard recovery lap. All the runners will get a 5-minute break after 15 minutes so that they can rehydrate. This is a difficult workout for everyone. But, since there's a meet on Wednesday, the team will only run for 30 minutes as opposed to the usual 1 hour today, and then practice a few relay handoffs. No one likes the drill, but it does help to improve performance. Today, Mr. Fraser adds an interesting twist to the drill to make it more challenging and more interesting. Mr. Fraser calls Eddie, Mark, Braden, Johnson, Mitchell, and Akinmola in front of the group. Mr. Zunde joins them. What the team is about to hear was Mr. Zunde's idea. Holding a roll of duct tape, Mr. Zunde starts cutting off 1-inch lengths. Of course, everyone is wondering why Mr. Zunde is doing this. Mr. Fraser announces, Mr. Zunde will be taping a $20 bill to the backs of each of these 6 runners. Your job is to catch them. And if you can grab the $20 bill, it's yours. If you are a distance runner, you are after the $20 bill on Mitchell's, Akinmola's, or Johnson's back. If you are a sprinter, you are after the $20 bill on Eddie's, Mark's, or Braden's back. Now, listen up. If no one gets the $20 bill on any of the runners back, that runner gets to keep it. And if you have a $20 bill taped to your back, you are not eligible to swipe one from someone else's back. And you are only allowed to grab the bill during the sprinting part of the drill, not during the recovery laps. Does everybody understand? Everyone seems to understand, so the drill is ready to begin. Mark mentions to Eddie, this is going to be better than kill the man with the ball. Braden exclaims, ain't no one getting my Andrew Jackson. I'm going to be $20 richer by the end of the day. The drill starts, and everyone is after $20 or more. The distance group, following Mitchell, Akinmola, and Johnson, quickly fall behind. Mitchell, Akinmola, and Johnson look strong, but are careful not to lap the slower runners. They quickly realize that there will be quite the spread of runners on the track after a while, so strategy will become very important. But, fortunately, a lot of runners will tire faster than Mitchell or Akinmola, giving them a distinct advantage. And Johnson, who is a far capable sprinter than anyone on the distance team, will be the most difficult in the distance group to catch. On the sprinting side of things, Eddie, Mark, and Braden are not caught in the first 440 yards. Only a few sprinters even stand a chance to get any of the $20 bills. John, Erika, and Hoffa are at the top of the list of contenders. But, if you ask Braden, he's already made $20 during this workout. In the sprinting group, a lot of energy is expended in the first mile, with the runners not wanting to fall too far behind Eddie, Mark, and Braden. What the slower runners haven't figured out is that, if they do fall behind, the group wearing the $20 bills will eventually lap them, bringing the prize again within reach. As the drill proceeds, Mr. Fraser tells Mr. Zunde, "I don't think I've ever seen them practice so hard." Mr. Zunde mentions, "Maybe I'll up it to $50 sometime and see what happens." Mr. Fraser comments, "Take a look at that. Erika is really after Mark. And Mark's messing with her." Mr. Zunde replies, "Erika should probably go after someone else. Being the master of psychological warfare, Mark definitely has the advantage out there. It is clear that Erika really wants $20 or more." Kathy, Paula, and Barbara walk up and join the discussion. Barbara mentions, "It's too bad Brad Evans isn't sitting in the bleachers today." Mr. Fraser laughs and replies, "The workouts over at Centerville will get very expensive if they think we do this every day." Barbara comments, "You know, I really wish Evans was here. That would be hilarious." Mr. Zunde makes mention, "Well, if the spies ever show up again, we'll put on a show for them." 15 minutes later, not a single one of the $20 bills was grabbed from any of the runners' backs. Toward the end of the drill, Erika, who has been putting in a monumental effort to grab one of the bills, chases down Eddie. Eddie, who doesn't need the money, allows Erika to get a little close. With all she has left, Erika sprints toward Eddie. Eddie speeds up a bit, but Erika quickly grabs the bill taped to his back. Seeing what just happened brings a smile to Mr. Zunde's face. To everyone, it looks like Eddie was caught off guard. But Eddie's secret, seeing how hard Erika tried to get a $20 bill, is that he allowed Erika to catch him. On the track, Eddie's performance is better than ever. Kathy is very glad to see Eddie back on the track again. After Mr. Crum pulled his shit a few weeks ago, Kathy found it very difficult to do her job as a team assistant. Eddie pointed out to Kathy that he'll be gone next year anyway, but the issue was not that Eddie left, it's how and why he left. After the drill, Eddie spends the rest of the time practicing the discus. Using what he learned in physics class, Eddie can now throw the discus farther than before. Mr. Zunde is surprised that Eddie can now consistently throw the discus over 200 feet. His best throw today was 218 feet, 2 inches. A throw like that will not only wrap up first place in the discus tomorrow, but will likely take the gold medal at the state invitational meet this year. After throwing the discus for a while, Eddie gives the shot put a try, just for fun. Bobby B asks Eddie, "So, are you throwing the shot put now?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. There's been a change in plans. You're running the 100-yard dash tomorrow." Everyone is glad to see Eddie is back to himself again. But between Bobby B and Gump, the team will take first and second place in the shot put tomorrow. And if necessary, Mr. Zunde will put Mark or Johnson up in the shot put to secure sweeping the event. After practice, Eddie and Kathy head to their house to jump in the pool for a while before they go home. Before Kathy gets in the pool, she empties the skimmers, being sure to check for dead frogs, while Eddie checks the pool chemistry. Even though they don't live there yet, the pool still has to be attended to. Kathy takes quick notice that Eddie has done a lot around the house. With 3 weeks off of school, he certainly has made a lot of progress. As they are floating in the pool, Eddie tells Kathy, "When I was working on the house one day, I went out on a run, since I didn't have my bicycle. It's really peaceful out here." Kathy tells Eddie, "Yeah, I like it." Kathy then asks Eddie, "Shh, do you hear that?" Listening for something, Eddie tells her, "I don't hear anything." Kathy tells him, "Exactly. No car noise. No trucks. Nothing but wind blowing through the trees and the birds singing. That's why I like it so much here." A while later, still floating around in the pool, Kathy asks Eddie, "Do you know how mad Mr. Fraser was at Mr. Crum for the last few weeks?" Eddie asks, "He was mad?" Kathy replies, "Oh yeah. After Dr. Brooks talked to you after the Centerville meet, she came to practice a few days later, looking for Mr. Fraser. Mr. Fraser had a long discussion with Dr. Brooks that day. He was so busy talking with Dr. Brooks that he didn't even work with the team. She even spoke to Braden, Bobby B., Johnson, Mark, and Mitchell during practice that day." Kathy adds, "Mr. Fraser's blood has been boiling since the Centerville meet. Then, after finding out that he now reports to Mr. Zunday, he's been in a whole lot better mood." Eddie tells Kathy, "Wow. I guess I missed a lot in the last 3 weeks." After an hour in their pool, Eddie and Kathy head home. Eddie has already missed 5 track meets, and Wednesday is the big meet against Riverdale. And besides, Eddie now has to do homework. His 3-week vacation is over. But one thing Eddie learned is that he actually enjoys working on his and Kathy's house, slowly turning the house into their home. Wednesday, Eddie is ready to run in his first meet of the spring season. All the students in the school are aware of what happened with Eddie and his argument with Mr. Crum. The word has gotten around that Mr. Crum lost, Eddie won, and he is back in school. Everyone also is well aware that Mr. Fraser and the rest of the gym teachers now report directly to Mr. Zunday. And everyone is also aware that Chucky is not quite the bully he purports to be, but, instead, he's nothing but a big baby. Finding this out, some of the girls are now taunting Chucky, and justifiably so. The girls seen taunting him were bullied by Chucky many times in the past. As it turns out, Erica was not Chucky's only female target over the years. The end of the school day arrives, and the team heads to the locker room. Bobby B. is no longer supervising the shot put being moved from the school out to the track. With the new equipment building, the shot put is stored with all the other equipment. Wendy now performs the ceremonial task of moving the shot put from the storage building to the field. Truth be told, the shot put is placed in the back of the Cushman along with all the other field implements, receiving no special treatment at all. Bobby B. would be appalled at the treatment the shot put is receiving this year. But he'll never know. Erica and Bobby B. now walk out to the field together, along with the rest of the team. Today, the stands are full, with standing room only. While this is quite unusual for a track meet, it's no secret that nearly half of the school is attending the track meet to watch Eddie run, voicing their opposition to Mr. Crum's tyrannical attitude. Mr. Crum, reluctantly sitting in the stands, is only watching because Dr. Brooks, the superintendent of schools, strongly suggested that he attend the meets. Dr. Brooks is present herself today, sitting next to the high school physics teacher, Miss Amherst. With so many spectators in the stands, the team will undoubtedly deliver their best performance of the year. The Riverdale team arrives, along with their coach, Mr. Lyons. Mr. Lyons always seems to have a problem with Mr. Fraser taking first place in every event. As the Riverdale team exits their bus, they immediately notice the large number of fans in the stands. Getting situated at their bench, the coach, Mr. Lyons, gives his team a pep talk. Mr. Lyons specifically tells his team that Northside is very good at psychological warfare and not to fall for any of their underhanded tricks. The meet begins, and after the hurdles event will be the 100-yard dash. Eddie, Hoffa, and John, who are running the 100-yard dash today, are hanging around at the bench, waiting for the hurdles event to finish. Mr. Fraser tells his sprinters, from what we know, they have two good sprinters, Brad Turner and James Gregory. They can run the 100 in the 10-second range. Implying that those times are not too impressive, Eddie asks, so, then who are their good sprinters? Mr. Fraser exclaims, that's the kind of attitude that wins meets. The call is made for the 100-yard dash. Eddie, Hoffa, and John head to the starting line. Mr. Fraser and Kathy walk with them, with Mr. Fraser wondering where Eddie's performance stands. The Riverdale sprinters, already at the blocks, include Turner and Gregory. Eddie sets his blocks, as Kathy reminds him of his block settings since it's been a few weeks since he's been on the track. Eddie tells the Riverdale runners, hey, good luck. You'll need it. The Riverdale sprinters are surprised by Eddie's confidence. One of them replies, yeah. We haven't lost this event all year. More confident than ever, Eddie tells them, I am going to tie the national record in this race. As I said, good luck to all of you. You're really going to need it. Even Mr. Fraser is surprised at what Eddie just said. Mr. Fraser and Kathy head to the finish line. On the way to the finish line, Mr. Fraser asks Kathy, has Eddie ever ran a 9.3? That's the national record. Kathy replies, yeah. At the university, about a half year ago. Mr. Fraser, surprised to learn this, comments, I thought he was just messing with their heads. Kathy confidently replies, with a long pause between each word, I don't think so. Not today. At the finish line, Mr. Fraser asks the head timekeeper, do we have any extra timekeepers? The head timekeeper replies, no. But we all have two watches. Mr. Fraser, asking for a favor, mentions to the head timekeeper, if it's not too much trouble, get an extra watch on the guy in lane 3. The head timekeeper instructs the two officials assigned to lane 1 and 6, clock the guy in lane 3 as well. Lanes 1 and 6 usually have the slower runners, so the timekeepers assigned to those lanes can simultaneously time a faster runner. The starter, who is impressed with Eddie's confidence, announces, on your marks. The starter announces, set. The gun goes off, and the runners are out of the blocks. After 20 yards, Eddie clearly has no competition in this race, gaining ground with every step he takes. John and Hoffa battle it out with Turner and Gregory for second and third place. At 50 yards, it is clear to the timekeepers why Mr. Fraser wanted an extra watch on Eddie. Now having the timekeeper's full attention, Eddie is having the best run of his life. At the finish line, three timekeepers and Mr. Fraser have their full attention on Eddie, ready to click their stopwatches as he crosses. As Eddie approaches the finish line, he does not relent. No surprise to anyone, Eddie finishes in first place, with four stopwatches documenting his time. Second place is still a battle between John and Hoffa. It appears Turner and Gregory were a bit overrated, but nevertheless good competition. Today, Hoffa beats out John by a few steps. But it doesn't matter. Northside takes first, second, and third place, sweeping the event. Mr. Fraser is heard exclaiming, he broke the record. I clocked him at 9.2. Eddie broke the record. Can you believe it? The timekeepers, however, are not so quick to make an announcement. Having their own meeting, the timekeepers compare their stopwatches, all knowing that they have just witnessed the biggest event of this year's track season. They lay the four stopwatches that document Eddie's time on the track, which includes Mr. Fraser's, and a photograph is taken. Wanting to hear the news, Mr. Fraser is exclaiming over and over, "What did you guys clock him at?" As everyone is anxiously awaiting the announcement, the timekeepers discuss the results among themselves. The long-awaited announcement comes. The head timekeeper finds the bullhorn and announces, "May I have your attention, please? We have all just witnessed history in this state today. One watch records 9.3 seconds, and three watches record 9.2 seconds. I am officially recording Edward Boganskaya's time as 9.25 seconds, breaking the national record in the 100-yard dash for high school competition, which was previously 9.3 seconds. Congratulations, Edward. It is only once in a decade that an event like this occurs in any high school track and field event." Jumping up and down, Mr. Fraser exclaims, "He did it. He did it. Eddie broke the record." Kathy and Eddie have their own celebration. Kathy jumps up onto Eddie's hips, giving him the biggest congratulatory hug imaginable. The team cheers wildly, and the crowd goes wild. Eddie gets a high five and a fist bump from everyone around, even from the runners on the Riverdale team. Even Mr. Lyons, the Riverdale coach, comes over to congratulate Eddie. But after a while, the meet must go on, and runners in the next event prepare to run. But before the meet continues, the head timekeeper calls the head field judge over to measure the distance before the track is disturbed by any other events. With the surveying tape used to measure the distance that the field implements are thrown, the head field judge and another field judge measure the distance, making sure it is exactly 100 yards. The measurement comes in at 100 yards and 3/4 of an inch. Validating the distance is just as important as validating the time when a national record is broken. If the distance was less than 100 yards, Eddie's time would be disqualified as a potential record. The small 3/4 inch excess was due to a slight variation in the lime line used to mark the starting line and finish line. During the brief intermission, Dr. Brooks mentions to Miss Amherst, "Wow. I knew Eddie was good, but breaking the national record, I certainly wasn't expecting that today." Miss Amherst informs Dr. Brooks, "At the state meet, there's a good chance that Eddie will break the state record in the discus, and Robert Bradshaw will break the state record in the shot put." Dr. Brooks replies, "I will definitely be attending that meet." Miss Amherst adds, "So will I. Oh, and here's something that you may not know. Eddie unofficially broke the state record in the 50-yard and in the 100-yard freestyle during swim team tryouts this year." Barbara Hamilton could not believe what she saw. Dr. Brooks, stating the obvious, replies, "And he's had to plow through Maurice's roadblocks the whole way." Once the field judges confirm the track length, Eddie is all fired up. Eddie walks over to the field area to make his first discus throw. The field athletes, often unaware of what goes on in the running events, did not miss hearing about Eddie's accomplishment. Mr. Zunday, Bobby B., Gump, and the other field athletes give Eddie a high five. As Eddie sits on the bench waiting to make his throw, Mr. Zunday tells Eddie, "Congratulations. No one expected that to occur today. That's the kind of performance that you usually only see during the state or national meets." Eddie, who is in an elated mood, replies, "Thank you. Thank you." Eddie's turn comes up for the discus. Taking hold of the discus, Eddie walks toward the discus pad. Making a suggestion to the head field judge, Mr. Zunday tells him, "You might want to have the judges move out past the 200-foot line." The judges were naively standing at about the 140-foot line. The head field judge waves to the field judges, suggesting that they should move back. Eddie then steps onto the discus pad. After winding up, Eddie goes into the spin, letting out a primal scream as he releases the discus. Soaring through the air, the discus finds its resting place just past the 215-foot mark. Mr. Zunday tells Eddie, "That was a very good throw. You're in first place. The measurement comes in at 215 feet, 3 inches, setting a new school record. Watching from the bleachers is Miss Amherst, Eddie's physics teacher, who is very pleased to see Eddie's throw. Miss Amherst is positioned in the bleachers to get a good view of the field events. Apparently, the field events are her favorites. Earlier in the meet, Miss Amherst got Mr. Zunday's attention after Bobby B's first attempt of the day. She told Mr. Zunday that she had noticed that Bobby B's release angle might be a bit high. Mr. Zunday relayed this information to Bobby B, whose second attempt was much better than his first. Back on the track, Riverdale's two good sprinters aren't as good as they were reported to be. Well, compared with Northside's sprinters anyway. So, Mr. Fraser makes a mid-course change and has John run the 220-yard dash along with Mark and Elliot. Eddie will be running in the 4x440 relay, back on the team that took the gold medal during the indoor season state invitational meet. The call is made for the 220-yard dash. On the way to the starting line, Mark tells Paula, "Hey, watch this. I'm going to tell John and Elliot to check their legs for ticks." That worked really good for the Centerville meet. Play along with me. John and Elliot already know this one, so they'll be ready to support Mark's story. With any luck, the news about the hazard on the track will make its way back to the Riverdale bench. At the starting line, Mark checks the back of his legs, asking Paula, "Do you see any?" Paula replies, "No." Telling John and Elliot to turn around, Paula announces, "You guys are good. No ticks." Catching Paula's comment, one of the Riverdale runners asks, "How come you're checking for ticks?" With a very serious expression, Paula replies, "The track was infested with ticks during last week's meet. A guy from Henderson even had a few ticks on his balls. Who knows, they could have crawled up his butt." Mark has to turn around, pretending to check his shoelaces, to conceal his laughter. How Paula even said that with a straight face is a miracle. That kind of news is certainly not what a runner wants to hear a minute before a race. The starter, who often works meets at Northside, is amused by Paula's distraction of the opponent. With a silly grin on his face, the starter announces, "On your marks." The word, "set," is heard, as several of the Riverdale runners are looking back at their legs, checking for ticks. The gun is fired, and everyone is off. At 50 yards, Mark is in the lead, with John in second place. Elliot is right behind John. For the remainder of the race, Mark's lead over the rest of the runners widens. At the finish line, Mark takes first place, with John taking second place and Elliot taking third place. It's hard to say whether the Riverdale runners were distracted by Paula's comments, but they all continue to check their legs after the race. Mark, John, Elliot, and Paula return to the bench. Paula casually mentions to Kathy, "There's ticks on the track again." Kathy starts laughing, exclaiming, "No. Tell me you didn't." Paula replies, "Yeah. We did." Eddie asks, "What's all this about ticks?" Kathy informs Eddie, "You weren't there. During the Centerville meet, Mark told McCrutchen that there is an infestation of ticks on the track." Eddie starts laughing as Paula tells Kathy, "I told the Riverdale 220 guys that a guy from Henderson even had ticks on his balls and that they could have crawled up his butt." Kathy exclaims, "No. You didn't. Tell me you didn't." Mark tells Kathy, "Oh yeah, she did." Kathy laughs hysterically, never knowing that track and field could be this funny. After all the other events are run, the call for the last event, the 4x440 relay, is made. Braden, who won the 440-yard dash earlier, is all fired up. Braden exclaims, "Here we go. The final ass kicking of the afternoon. Let's get this ass kicking over with." Riverdale, not taking first place in an event all afternoon, is already feeling defeated. Riverdale knows that they probably won't win this race either, since they are up against the state's best team in this event. Both teams head to the starting line, knowing that the outcome of this race will change nothing. At the starting line, Turner, Gregory, the guy Braden beat in the 440-yard dash, and their best 220 guy are all waiting. Mark catches a few of the Riverdale runners checking their legs for ticks. Braden, seeing the guy he beat in the 440-yard dash, exclaims, "Yo, mouth. What leg are you running? I want to kick your ass again." Braden gave this guy the nickname, the mouth, because he was telling everyone how he was going to beat Braden. The mouth ignores Braden, but it's a sure bet that their 440-yard dash guy is the anchor leg. Seeing Gregory holding the baton, Eddie will lead off, and Braden will be the anchor. Mr. Fraser allows any changes to the order the team wants. During this race, they are not running against Riverdale as much as they are running for a ticket to the state invitational meet, since Eddie was not present earlier in the season. The starter tells the runners to get ready. Paula tosses the baton to Eddie, and Eddie gets behind the blocks. The starter announces, "On your marks." Once both runners are ready, the starter announces, "Set," followed by the gun. Eddie takes the lead, leaving Gregory behind once again. Eddie, however, doesn't let his guard down. Gregory might be better in a 440-yard sprint than he was in the 100-yard dash. At the midway point, Mr. Fraser exclaims, "He's clocking a sub-50. Everyone standing around knows what that means. Eddie approaches the transition zone, handing off to Johnson. Johnson takes off, and the guy who lost to Mark in the 220-yard dash earlier receives his baton about 10 seconds later. 10 seconds, while it does not sound like a lot, translates to about 100 yards at this pace. This is not good news to the Riverdale team. With 100 yards to make up, they will have a tough time ahead of them, especially since Johnson increases the lead by another 50 yards, or more than 5 seconds, as he hands off to Mark. Johnson gets the news from Mr. Fraser that he also ran a sub-50-second quarter mile. Mark is up against Turner in his leg. Turner watches as Mark is long gone before he receives his baton. As Mark is on the back straightaway, he sees Turner across the track. Braden is exclaiming, "I wanted to kick the mouth's ass, but the race is gonna be over before he runs." Mark, coming around the curve, sees Braden, who can't keep still, right ahead of him. Mark hands off to Braden, leaving the mouth 250 yards to make up. Braden, out to deliver yet another sub-50-second quarter mile, is looking for another ticket into the state invitational meet this year. The rest of the relay team watches as Braden widens the lead. Braden crosses the finish line, with Mr. Fraser carefully inspecting his stopwatch. Beating the opposition by more than 45 seconds, the relay team celebrates, exchanging high fives. In a repeat performance of last winter, the 4x440 relay team is now going to the state invitational meet for the second time this year. Having the best afternoon of the spring track season, the team walks away with a victory in every event. Mr. Lyons congratulates both Eddie and Mr. Fraser, not only for today's victory, but for Eddie breaking the national record in the 100-yard dash. The meet officials also congratulate Eddie, expressing that they were glad to be present for the event. Coming down from the bleachers, Dr. Brooks and Miss Amherst find Eddie and personally congratulate him for breaking the national record in the 100-yard dash and his awesome discus throw this afternoon. The team heads to the lockers, planning to have a big celebration by getting pizza after the meet. After getting dressed, they all head to the pizzeria. When they arrive, they take their usual seat. Mr. Fraser walks in, taking a seat with the tribe. Mr. Zunde walks in a few minutes later, along with Miss Amherst. Since they are a large group, Joe comes over and takes their order. Joe learns that Eddie broke the national high school record in the 100-yard dash and congratulates him. Everyone orders pizza and are convinced that eating pizza is the reason they keep winning meets. And while the pizzas are in the oven, Joe gets a few photographs of the group with their coaches, which will be displayed on the wall with Joe's collection of his favorite customers. After dinner, everyone steps outside and talks for a few minutes before they head home. Mr. Zunday and Miss Amos congratulate the team again, then walk over to Mr. Zunday's Porsche 911. Kathy mentions to Paula, "Well, just take a look at that." Paula asks, "At what?" Kathy tells Paula, "Mr. Zunday and Miss Amherst. They are walking way too close together. They have overlapping body parts." Taking a second look, Paula comments, "Yeah, I can see that." Kathy then tells Paula, "Well, that really explains a lot." Paula asks, "What do you mean?" Kathy explains, "Do you remember back in physics class last year? Miss Amherst was always talking about physics and then applied everything to running around a track. And then, at the end of the year, she started applying everything to throwing a discus, shot put, or something." Paula exclaims, "That's right. And when you started throwing the discus, every week she had something in her lesson about a discus." Bringing Eddie and Mark into the conversation, Kathy asks them, "Does Miss Amos talk a lot about track and field in her lessons?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. Quite a lot." Mark adds, "She even told us all the proper angles to throw the implements. The greater the air resistance, the lower the angle should be." Kathy exclaims, "See that? I knew it." Eddie asks, "Knew what? Can someone tell me what we're talking about?" Eddie feels like he's not only missed 3 weeks of school, but thinks he's missed something else as well. Kathy explains, "Mr. Zunday and Miss Amherst just walked to Mr. Zunday's car, and they had overlapping body parts." Eddie asks, "What are overlapping body parts?" Kathy explains, "That was a school rule a long, long time ago. It's supposed to stop students from making out in the hallways. But it also means that you can get detention or be suspended for nearly everything in gym class, like wrestling or basketball." Eddie laughs, telling Kathy, "That is seriously funny. You can't have overlapping body parts in school." Getting back to the subject, Kathy tells Eddie, "You guys should keep an eye on those two. There's definitely something going on between them." After thinking about it, Paula mentions, "I can't believe we haven't seen this before." Mark comments, "Miss Amherst is at all the meets. She always sits over near the field area where Mr. Zunday is. And she always sits with Dr. Brooks. And Dr. Brooks is Mr. Zunday's cousin. It looks like the secret may be out. If there is anything going on between Mr. Zunday and Miss Amherst, Kathy will certainly find out."